First of all, I just want to welcome everybody back to another Friday edition of Late Night with Lox. Can't thank you guys so much for always tuning in, being very supportive of us as we embarked on this endeavor that was kind of started out as just a way to connect and stay relevant, and it's really morphed into a very stressful show for me because lining up guests to come on and the thing goes, it changes with the day, but it's part of, I guess, showbiz. So thank you guys, our viewers that come on and are very loyal to Late Night with Lox, for coming on and giving us an opportunity to just get away from all the other things that are going on in our world, to spend time talking everything DMV, everything Terps, everything, whatever we want to talk about. I want to thank Coach T, Mike Tomlin, for coming on last Tuesday, him as well as Antoine Brooks. We had two, there was a Pittsburgh Steeler theme, and to have Mike Tomlin come on and give us his time, I want to thank Coach T for that, as well as Antoine Brooks. It was a great conversation, and want to wish those guys the best of luck as they move forward into their the start of their preparation for their season. If you missed the show, as I've always said, you can catch it on NBC Sports Washington. They rerun it on their platform, our Maryland Athletics YouTube channel, as well as the Hear the Terps podcast. All three platforms rebroadcast the Late Night with Lox show. So if you miss it and you're catching this late, feel free to check it out on one of those three platforms. And I definitely want to give a special shout out again to the teachers and nurses. This is Teacher Appreciation Week, as well as Nurse Appreciation Week. And again, the work that you guys do on the front line, and teachers still with the online teaching and going above and beyond, I just can't thank you guys enough for all that you do, and all the frontline workers that continue to service us and help us as we work through the pandemic. Let's get started, because this is a show that, you know, I know that a few people probably have opinions on this, but we finally get to set the record straight on tonight's show, because I've got the opportunity to bring on a player, a person that I've gotten to know. I met him, I think, the first day he touched down in the D.C. area in ninth grade. He came over with his dad and Sean Springs. I remember it vividly. We were at a two-a-day's practice at the time, and I can remember a tall, skinny, kind of gangly kid coming over with Sean Springs and his dad, and spent some time with him. He was the Big Ten Player of the Year in 2018, was the Big Ten Championship Game MVP, the 2019 Rose Bowl MVP, first round, the 15th pick of the 2019 for my Washington Redskins. Let's bring on Dwayne Haskins Jr. See if my man DHJ can get connected. What's up, Simba?
Hey, what up, Lox? How you doing?
Oh, man, look at me. I'm a talk show host tonight.
What's hey, going I see on with you.
Huh?
Ain't nothing much. Just working hard, man. Trying to stay in shape and getting to learn this playbook.
I got you, man. So I always ask all our guests, and we've had some big time local guests on, and obviously you're representing my Redskins, the team I grew up rooting for. What have you been doing? How have you been preparing during the quarantine, especially with, you know, some of the limitations? I follow you on Instagram, so I know you're working. But how's the quarantine preparation been for you?
Yeah, I mean, I got a home gym. I got a sauna at the house, so I work out here every day. There's a local field about 25 minutes. I go there, throw with a couple of my receivers, Terry, Kelvin, whoever local guys I can find. Sure, you know, a couple of recruits. And we meet Monday through Thursday on Zoom with the quarterback coach and the offensive coordinator. We install our plays, and, you know, so it's still like doing OTAs right now, but, you know, just doing it from home.
So you're working.
Yes, yeah, sir.
Always working. Now, you know, one of the things I always like to ask, because you just finished your rookie season, the transition, obviously you played at a program that has done a great job of preparing players for the next level, much like we do here at Maryland. How is that transition? And again, you went from being a starter at Ohio State, and putting up prolific numbers, you know, being up on the stage for the Heisman Trophy, and then you came into the Redskins as a rookie, and they kind of slowed you down and wanted to bring you along the right way, and you finished the season as a starter. How was that transition for you, going from a guy that was playing all the time again being fed the slow process of developing you and then finishing the year the way you did. How was that process for you?
Yeah, I mean, even at Ohio State, I didn't play my first year. I was a backup my second year. I was a starter my last year, and I thought I did enough to, go to the NFL. And having the situation we had last year with the coaching changes and the opportunity for me to play, I was just excited to get some reps. So just a transition from being able to play at the collegiate level at a high level and then play in the NFL, and then not only that, but be at home, was just a great experience for me, for myself, for my family as well, and just appreciative of the moment, and just keep working hard and knowing that the time will come for me to really shine.
Right. Now, one of the things you had to experience as a rookie is the backup role. And this is a great question that hopefully if we have any young aspiring quarterback on here watching us, talk a little bit about how the preparation of being a backup is to where, if the number's called, you got to be ready. And go through a little bit of how that was for you. Again, you started out the season and really, in the next, they slow played it, but how did you go about preparing as a backup, make yourself ready for when your number, if your number would be called?
Even going back into college, as a quarterback, you want to play. It's very competitive, thing that you have going in your heart and your mind, and first initial reaction is I should be the guy, but eventually you learn to still study, still prepare as if you're the starter. The reps would be limited, but the confidence doesn't change. So being able to still work hard and compete, and whether it's scout team reps or it's first team reps or second team reps, I'm playing like I'm a starter. I'm playing on Sunday. And people got to be able to, especially young guys, understand that right now you might not always play. You might not always be better than the guy ahead of you. But if you continue to work hard and put, the grind first, eventually you'll get your opportunity.
Yeah, which leads me right into my next question. Most people see a big jump from year one to year two. You're going into this thing kind of as the established guy. Obviously, there's always going to be competition, especially at the quarterback position. But what's your mindset? What's your expectations that you set for yourself? And not with others, but with knowing you personally that you set for yourself going into year two?
Well, right now I'm in the best shape of my life. Just preparing myself mentally for the grind of training, getting ready for the season, the hits you'll take, the process of getting through the week of Monday through Sunday is, being able to stay fresh, keep your mind fresh, and just the grind of having been through it last year, understanding the process for it, really looking forward to it next year because I know what the hell I'm doing, and it's not fresh anymore. So just looking forward to it because, when you're young, you think you know everything, you think you know how to do it until somebody else shows you how to do it. And then my dad always tells me, your way isn't good enough, So. Now that I kind of understand it, been around Alex, been around other quarterbacks who played before, and even being with JT in college, now they show me the ropes. I can go there and swing it. So I'm excited.
Gotcha. Now with the new staff, as you talked about earlier, there's a new regime coming in to take over. You have Coach Rivera coming in, a new culture. What has your interaction been with Coach Rivera, well as what are you looking forward to out of the new staff? Just a short time of obviously you guys are doing Zoom meetings now, installing things. Kind of give us a little bit of what the interaction has been with the new staff and what you look forward to.
Yeah, it's been great. When Rivera got hired, I was there that weekend to go see him, meet him in person. I met his wife, shook his daughter's hand, and he had a great conversation in his office. And, Scott Turner is from Reston, Virginia. He played high school over in Oakton, and it's just crazy how many hometown people are playing and coaching for the Redskins. No one really understands that. It's more pride, I feel, when you think about it that way. And just that and then Sam Peasy, the quarterback coach, we all had great interactions as far as their expectations for me and what they want for me this year. And be a great leader from the get. So that's what I'm doing right now.
Gotcha. Now let's work a little bit backwards. As I introduced you, I talked about the first time I remember.
Going
to ninth grade, the summer. you had just moved down. I remember Sean Springs brought you and your dad over to, and we was at the end of a Maryland two-a-day practice, and I got to spend some time with you on the field. Talk a little bit about the move from New Jersey, because a lot of people don't understand. They think that this area is kind of home for you, but kind of transplanted down to ninth grade. What went into moving from New Jersey to here? And talk about the impact of playing in this area and how it benefited you.
Yeah, I mean, I always say like Jersey raised me, Maryland made me. I lived in Jersey to about eighth grade. Having met Sean when I was a younger kid, he had his own sons my age, and met him at a football camp, and he just told me about the DMV area and how talented the players are in the high schools in the area. And I was just looking for somewhere to go to school, and Sean brought me down to Maryland and showed me the Gonzagas and the DeMathas and the St. John's of the world. And I picked Bullis because of the opportunity for me and my sister to be able to go to high school together. A lot of the schools are all boys' schools, and my sister's really big into arts, and she's a theater major. So Bullis has a great art school. So that was one of the decisions for me. Mom had a better opportunity financially down here, what she does, and this opportunity to be recruited. I just want to go to college. I didn't know I was going to go to Ohio State or anywhere. I had dreams of it, but I mean, not everybody gets to go where they want to go. So, I mean, having moved down to this area, just thankful for them embracing me the way they did from freshman year at Bullis, and being an All-Met, being a Gatorade State Player of the Year in Maryland, it was just, made me feel like home. So that's why I have so much pride about the DMV.
Right. Speaking of not thinking about going to Ohio State or even where you wanted to go to college, listen, I'm gonna go into my Gayle King mode because, man, you take a lot of hits. I took a lot of hits when I left here in 2015 to go to Alabama, and you decided to you committed to Maryland while I was the coordinator. Talk a little bit about what went into the commitment to Maryland initially, and then let's set the record straight as to what went into you decommitting. This is
I caused so much heat for
decommitting.
that, man. Oh, I couldn't tell you. Like the whole decision going into Maryland, I committed my junior year of high school. It was May 15th. Remember the day still. And I committed, and then the whole idea of it was to, bring everybody home, because you go to Florida, everyone wants to go to Florida, everyone wants to go to Miami, everybody wants to go to the Florida schools. From Texas, everybody wants to go to Texas A&M, and all the schools like that. So why not everybody from Maryland go to Maryland? Why is it so complicated? Everybody wants to go to the other schools. And I never understood it back then because I wasn't born there, what I'm saying? So I was like, man, everybody go. So, I mean, I love the fact just because of I was a communications major, the great communications school there. I mean, I had you there. I love Coach Etzel, and having watched Stefan and all everybody else that was there before. I thought it was a great foundation for me to be somebody to, help lead that movement. So that's why I committed. And having the season that happened that next year, the firing of Coach Etzel, and then this the recruitment process of trying to figure out what was gonna happen with you. And then you didn't get retained, and then from there it just went south. And I don't want to talk about what happened with the other coaching staff, but I was committed to the movement, committed to Loxley, committed to the idea of making a better Maryland. So, and then that idea changed, and that's why I had to change my decision.
I can remember staying in touch with you over the, when I decided to go to Alabama and you went elsewhere. And we both took some hits. I took some hits for that, locally, but I always enjoyed watching. I remember for 2 years the process of recruiting. I recruited you from 8th grade to 11th, so it was a 2 year process. I remember you coming up talking football, talking quarterback play, talking development. I remember the Monday nights with my iPad, turning it around, showing you the game from Saturday, explaining kind of what happened in those games. And, I felt very comfortable, and I know you did, and the family did, just what Maryland had to offer. Obviously, you went to Ohio State, had a great career there, and it benefited you. I went to Alabama, and because of me making the move to Alabama, I tell people that's what brought me back here. And obviously now you're back here with the Redskins. So it kind of worked out for its best, but I wanted to make sure we set the record straight there. You didn't just bail on the Terps just for the sake of that you wanted to go to Ohio State. There's a lot of things that go into decision making when you choose a college. And I can remember telling you that next to picking a wife is the most important decision you make. And
yes, sir.
A lot of people don't understand recruiting is a relationship business more than necessarily X's and
The
O's,
name,
more than
right?
where you go. And to me, I think that played a part in my decision making as well as yours. So I'll tell you what, man, I appreciate you coming on. We finally got to say your piece to explain it. We had a lot of people when they saw that you were coming on the show tonight were like, well, why are we bringing him on? But I wanted to give you the
I still got
opportunity.
love from Maryland. I talked to a lot of the players on the team still. Ain't no love laws. I know people might not understand it, but that's not my problem no more.
It's
So.
business, man. It's a business. And I've always been a pro proud of the way you've carried yourself. I know the family very, very well. Mom, dad, your sister, obviously, she's at college now, right?
Yeah. She's a freshman at SCAD. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so she's into the theater and into the arts, man. Well, I appreciate you coming on, setting the record straight, man. You know?
Thanks, man. I appreciate you for having me.
You know, you're always welcome over over in College Park. We'll stay in touch, man. Thanks for coming on today.
Yeah, no problem. Appreciate you, brother.
All right. Dwayne Haskins, we got the record set straight. Had an opportunity to kind of go through the decision-making process. Again, committed to Maryland as a junior. Obviously, a lot of things changed, and this is the part of the recruiting process. And we got recruits on here probably. Just understand for our fans and for all the supporters, we can't get them all, and we won't get them all. But our goal is to try to get the best 25 guys that we can possibly get to help our program get better. And these kids and their families have to make business decisions as well. And there's no love lost when they decide elsewhere. I would prefer that players like Dwayne Haskins and all these great local guys stay here at home. It's great to hear him talk about. He was Jersey born, but Maryland made. This area has become a hotbed for talent. We have so many talented players in this area, and we've got a great university to sell, as well as a great program that we're building to make it a very powerful, powerful brand. So, again, I want to thank Dwayne Haskins for coming on. As we wait to add our second guest, I want to hit a couple questions that I know we put questions out. And the first one says, what was your favorite memory so far as a coach? I talked about my favorite memory as a Terp coach was walking up the stands for the Clemson game. But my all-time favorite memory of a coach took place in 2018, actually 2017, when we won the national championship at Alabama. And it was special for me and for a lot of reasons. It starts with the fact that the game was played in the brand new Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. And ESPN did a story on this to where we opened the season at Alabama against Florida State, brand new stadium. And it was the last time that I spoke to my son, Miko, after that game. And so we went through the whole year. When I talked to Miko after that game, one of the things he said was, he said, hey, Pop, you guys got a chance to be pretty good and can win it all if you can stay healthy, as I sat on the bus after the Florida State game. And so the season goes on, and the national championship game is in the same exact stadium that the season started. And so for me, every time the bus pulled into Mercedes-Benz Stadium, we practiced there during the championship week, I would just get overcome with emotions. And I had players – the Calvin Ridley's, Jerry Judy's, a bunch of players, Tony Brown, DB that played there, all knew the story and were very supportive of me. And so to win a national championship in the same stadium, the last place I ever talked to my son, was really emotional for me and my family. And my whole family was there, Kai, my youngest son, Corey, Mike Jr., Kia, we all were there. And it was just I was overwhelmed with emotion. So for me, that would be my most memorable moment as a coach, because as a coach, the ultimate goal is to win a national championship. And I had the opportunity to do it in the fashion we did it, obviously, the second and 26th throw Tua made to win the game, played a huge role. The receivers that I coached made big plays in the game. So that would be my biggest memory as a coach so far. But again, the book isn't done being written, and I'm looking forward to creating some really powerful memories here as we build the Maryland football family and the Maryland football brand together. So, next thing says, we saw your workout on your page. What else are you doing to stay in shape, and what are your goals? I don't like working out. I'll be the first to tell you. And, when the pandemic hit, one of my close friends, Myron Flowers, who runs the sports performance over at the St. James, and he's trained a ton of former Terps, Vernon Davis. He trained Stephon Diggs, Vontae Davis, Illinois. Really, it's been a ton of players that I've recruited. He personally trains. And Myron came over and said, look, man, my gym's closed. I need a place to work out, and I'm going to make you work out. So for the last 6 to 7 weeks, every morning at 7 a.m., Myron pulls up, and I'm always looking for a way to get out of the workout. I hate it. And but Myron has been great. We've challenged our players to make conscious decisions, to do things the right way, and I want to try to lead the right way by being a part of my personal change. So you can thank Myron Flowers for it. Those workouts that post, I would never post them ever, but he does it because he does that to put pressure on me so that now everybody knows. And so, you know, my goal is to just be healthy, you know, be able to be healthy. And I'm excited about 7 weeks in and haven't missed a workout. I want to thank Myron Flowers for pushing me. So we all got that person that pushes us, and Myron's done a great job here the last 7 weeks. We're going to get on now with the show. We got the next guest is a guy that, man, I love this kid's story. I've known him probably since he was 14 years old. He's from Prince George's County. This guy has just taken professional tennis by storm, kind of a child prodigy. I mean, he was a guy that you read about, heard about for years and years and years of his accolades on the tennis court. In 2013, he won the Orange Bowl at the age of 15, the Orange Bowl tournament, becoming the youngest boys single champion in the history of the tournament. At the age 17, he was the youngest American to participate in the main draw of the French Open since Mike and Chang. He won the U.S. Junior National Championship. He became the youngest American title holder on the ATP Tour with his win in the 2018 Delray Beach Open. Since Andy Roddick in 2002, he reached the quarterfinals of the Australian Open. His highest ranking has been at 29, and he's a top 100 world men's single guy. Let's bring on my guy, Francis Tiafoe. What's up, Franz?
How you doing, Coach?
What's the word?
Nothing much, man. Nothing much. It's hanging in. How about
hanging
you?
Hanging in, huh? Now, where are you? Are you in D.C.? Are you in Cali? Where are you?
Yeah, I'm in D.C. right now. I'm in D.C.
You've been here throughout the pandemic?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. Been safe and taking care of staying quarantined?
Yeah, staying low-key. I ain't out and about like that.
Good, man. Well, I'm going to start off with you the same way I do all the athletes or everybody that we bring on Late Night with Lox. What has the quarantine life been like for you? And how are you training, staying in shape? And even what are you hearing as far as where's tennis going once this thing opens up? Let's talk about what you've been doing during the pandemic first.
Yeah, I mean, working in my apartment garage, you can every day, making sure I'm fit, running around, you know, doing plows, you know, kind of, you know, just working on new things, even doing like some soccer drills, just kind of spice it up a little bit. And then I took a while off from tennis because I didn't even know when this thing was coming on. I was like, let me just work on my body, just stay fit. I didn't want to, you know, play too much and then, you know, get burned out in a sense. So started playing last week, you know, some courts nearby. And, yeah, so everything's been good. But I've been reflecting a ton, man, reflecting a ton.
Staying in shape. You're working out in your garage at your apartment. You haven't really picked up a racket till this week. So
yeah,
been 4 or 5 weeks. When is the last time you've taken 5 weeks off from not hitting a tennis ball?
Bruh. Maybe I was like three. Like, it's been a minute, man. It's been a minute. I can't believe I did it. But yeah, I was missing it, man. And I'm just happy to be back.
Well, that's great. So now, what's going on in the tennis world? I know from a football standpoint, you know, we have these phone calls every week with head coaches in the Big Ten Conference of Plan A, Plan B, Plan C. What are you guys hearing in your area? What's the latest?
Not a damn thing, man. I mean, they gave us start time July 13th. Hopefully that goes, but it's just with tennis, man. With everybody flying in from different countries and all that, it's that's the main problem. It's, you know, how it's not even with the fans and all that, because tournaments are cool with that, but it's just like, what are we gonna test every single player to play all these different tournaments? And you know, so that's the thing that people are trying to figure it out. But yeah, I mean, I really can't see us undergoing this year.
Right. Now, you've got a unique story. And again, I've known your story because we have a mutual friend in Omar Salah who introduced us back when you were 13, 14 years old. And, you know, your dad was part of building the JTT, the tennis center, right there, literally 3 minutes from the University of Maryland's campus, right off of Paint Branch Parkway. It was part of the construction crew that built that place, which our tennis teams actually utilize as the practice. And then once the facility was built, your dad was hired on there. And the story goes that you and your brother and your dad basically stayed there 5 days a week. And because your dad worked there, you and your twin brother, Frank, had a chance to pick up the rackets at the young age of, when did you start? Five?
Yeah, about 3-4. Yeah, roughly.
3-4-5. And then next thing I know, you just start hearing about these two tennis phenoms that were African-American tennis phenoms. So your dad works at the center, and they live there 5 days a week. And next thing you know, you're one of the most renowned junior tennis players. I mean, talk a little bit about the background of that and what it was like, man. Because it's an amazing story to see where you are. To see what you're doing, I've always told you, I've been so proud. You made me purchase the tennis app to watch your matches, and I'll be up at 2 a.m. watching you play over in Europe somewhere because I love following you and because of your story.
Yeah, man, Jordan was crazy. Jordan was crazy. I fell in love with the game of tennis. Obviously, I'm happy what my dad was able to do for us, put us in just a good environment, especially after school and. Yeah, I mean, we kind of just used that as a getaway. You know, play tennis each and every day. He would hold our little rackets in our hands and hit against the wall every day. And one thing led to another. My dad always talked about, never let any opportunities go for granted. This is a big opportunity. I kind of just grabbed it with two hands. So he's like, I took every opportunity I had and we just ran with it.
All right, and you've had a great junior career. Now, I mean, again, you were ranked as high as 29 this past cycle. You've been in the quarterfinals. You've won some junior tournaments as well as some ATP tournaments. Talk a little bit about, I read as I was doing some background on you for the interview, you talked about you're one of the few African-American tennis players on the tour. And I saw where in one of your articles you talked about you want to inspire others. And again, being born in Prince George's County, tennis and golf and some of these other sports aren't the prevalent sports that a lot of the kids that grew up in your neighborhood and my neighborhood pick up. What is it like being an ambassador for the game of tennis, especially for minorities?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's a big thing, and that definitely motivates me each and every day. I definitely would love, more African-Americans to play the game of tennis. Obviously, there's challenges within that. One of my goals, hopefully, I keep plugging away to make tennis, more accessible to these guys. Because obviously, that's why it's so easy to play football, so easy to play basketball. Because, you got a football, you're going to play. You got basketball, you're going to play. So, make things more simple. But yeah, man, it's an honor and a privilege. And I'm just trying to, be that guy and do things the right way.
This show is a DMV show and a Maryland show because of my affiliation, obviously, with Maryland.
Right.
One of the things I learned about you very quickly is you are DMV everything. I know in your bio on Instagram, It says DMV mentality. It's called the DMV DNA. And your Instagram bio says DMV mentality. Talk a little bit about what that means to you. And I know you're at Maryland basketball games. I mean, you hit me up for tickets for football, passes. You like the Wizards, you're at the Redskins.
Yeah.
You're almost like me. I mean, you're just kind of a hometown homer. Talk a little bit about this DMV mentality that you talk about.
Yeah, I mean, I just think we're dogs. I mean, I just think we feel like we got something to prove each and every time. Obviously, most people come with very humble beginnings, and they just got something to prove. And that's pretty much what it is. But yeah, I just love where I'm from, and I support all the teams, and I'm very active in that sense. But it's just a way of life. It's a lifestyle. Go and give out your best and be great.
Let's give our fans a little bit behind the scenes and talk about some of the motivational phone calls that you and I have had over the last year and a half.
Ooh,
remember talking to you after a tough loss to a. Who was that you lost to, Nadal?
Yeah.
When you lost to Nadal and I get a cryptic text message and it's late and I call you in the morning. And talk a little bit about that mean, your guy that has really gotten into the psyche of the motivational piece of it. And I know that you're like a sponge. Every time you come see me, you always ask me for, Coach, what do you do with this and how do you do with that? Talk a little bit about the psyche of what it takes to be a champion, especially in a game that's an individual sport like tennis.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so important to understand that you don't know everything. You've had experiences and you've learned a lot, but you don't know everything. And, you know, kind of just being that sponge and learning from guys like you, you know, people who've achieved greatness. So, yeah, man, and you definitely laid into me a couple of times to open my eyes.
About the effort and forgetting the last play. Like, don't worry about what just happened.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's get back to neutral mindset. Get back to that neutral mindset and win this set or this match or this point.
Right.
And I saw the frustration of, you know, we talked about that. I remember after the Nadal match, I was like, look, your emotions. And I told you the story of how Coach Saban says, look, man, you can play with emotion, but don't be emotional.
Right.
So we had that conversation. Now, look, I know you're a big KD fan. And Kevin Durant has his documentary coming out. What is it?
I saw that. That thing going to go hard. He's like, that DMV is something in the water.
Almost like the DMV DNA we're talking about. He's talking about, you know, the basketball players that have come out of Prince George's County. And I know you're a huge KD guy. I'm working my butt off to try to get KD on late night with Locks. Talk a little bit about what is it that you like about KD and a little bit about what you expect to see in this documentary we got coming out.
Yeah, well, first off, I didn't even know Quinn Cook was one of ours. That made me really interested in Quinn Cook. But no, I mean KD's special. I mean, you never seen an offensive assassin like him. I mean, this dude, I mean, he's just a scoring machine. And then yeah, you know, I fell in love with KD, his MVP speech. You know, him crying and explaining, you know, how much his mom really meant to him and everything her mom did. I mean, that's a strong woman right there. And you know, him giving all the credit and respects to her, you know, that's deep, you know, that's character. And after that, I was like, you know, KD, this guy's definitely special. And yeah, man, I mean, he's great basketball and great basketball for a guy like me.
And what a great segue into Mother's Day weekend. And you referenced KD. Right. I think right. I may even showed you the video that I had that had the KD speech. And again, you know, definitely want to wish your mom, because I know your mom played an integral role. Still the matriarch. She still runs the house.
Completely.
Your dad played a huge role in your tennis exploits, but mom rules the roost. So I know you're going to do something special for her for Mother's Day, as you should, you and Frank. And, man, I just want to, again, thank you for coming on to the show. Always been a guy. I've been really supportive of Maryland athletics, everything DMV. Wish you well, man. What's the first tournament? When you say y'all opening up the last thing, what's the first tournament if this thing gets going that you be preparing for?
Well, actually, yeah, funny you say that, DMV. Hopefully the city open out here in D.C. So, yeah, hopefully that's the first tournament that comes back.
What did it used to be called?
Leg Mason. Yeah.
Leg Mason tournament right up there on the park.
Exactly.
I spent some time up there going to tennis matches.
Yeah.
It's awesome to see you here at home, and I hope this thing opens up to give you a chance to go out and do what you love to do, and especially if it's right here at home in the city open deal, man. It'd be awesome to do it. And if this thing opens up, man, I'll be there to cheer you on. And you know you always have a home, because you would have came and played tennis at Maryland if you hadn't turned pro, right?
Right, exactly.
Exactly. Great to have you on, Francis. Tell your family I said hello. And, again, when this thing opens up, come by and see me, man.
Yeah, we'll see you soon, man. Take care, love.
All right. Francis TFO, big time representative of the DMV. As I told you, this is a DMV show, as well as the Maryland show, as well as the power of the network of what the Maryland brand has to offer and what this DMV brand has to offer. I want to thank our two guests tonight, Dwayne Haskins Jr. for setting the record straight, as well as Francis TFO for coming on. I appreciate you guys for listening in. We look forward to seeing you guys Tuesday right here, 7:00 p.m. Eastern Time, Late Night with Locks. You guys have a great weekend. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there this Sunday. You guys be safe. Thank you.